and welcome to the Geneva Health Files podcast. I'm Preeti Patnaik, the founding editor of Geneva Health Files, a weekly investigative newsletter that explores power and politics in global health. We are back after a longish hiatus, but we have good reasons that have kept us away from podcasting. Geneva Health Files has been actively reporting on the ongoing negotiations in global health, both on the discussions towards a new pandemic accord and the amendments to the international health regulations. So you will hear from us a lot more in the coming months. Today, we bring you voices from these negotiations. In this episode, you will hear from diplomats who have been leading the discussions on the process to amend the IHR, the acronym for these rules. These are technical rules that underpin the global architecture to public health emergencies. The current version of the IHR came into force in 2005. Now, in the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic, countries have decided to amend these rules for making them more fit for purpose. When we began reporting on potential new reforms for governance of health emergencies 2 years ago, many countries repeatedly emphasized the centrality of the international health regulations. Notwithstanding the steady political momentum that a new pandemic treaty was gaining in some countries back then in early 2021, countries often highlighted the delicate balance and careful negotiations over the years that had made the IHR one of the central pieces of global health law. These somewhat less understood technical regulations are now being amended as they have been before. What is different now, though, that it is a fairly different world where technology and disease are fusing to present evolving challenges for countries and regulators. Remember that the IHR are several decades old. In the politically charged discussions that current global health negotiations have become, diplomats have to walk a tightrope between delivering on political goals and bringing in concrete reforms to beef up preparedness, prevention, and response to health emergencies. The relative low profile of the discussions surrounding the amendments to these rules is in contrast to the optics generated by the negotiations for a pandemic accord. This could partly be by design and partly by the very nature of these discussions that are technical, no doubt, but also political. During a recent meeting in July 2023 at the World Health Organization in Geneva, we sat down with the co-chairs of the working group set up to amend the IHR. We spoke with Dr. Abdullah Asiri of Saudi Arabia and Dr. Ashley Bloomfield of New Zealand, who are tasked with leading these negotiations. We hope you enjoy this episode. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Asiri and Dr. Bloomfield. We are grateful for your time.
First, really, you know, to get your overall impressions of the process so far over the last few months, although the IHR discussion started later than the INB, it seems that you have caught up. And in some sense, it really depends over the months. Some delegates said that, okay, it's slower than the INB discussions, but now it seems that, you know, you have really made a lot of progress in the last few days. And just to understand where you stand at this point and whether, you know, the December 2023 effective deadline still works.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the opportunity to update on the progress. And I guess it's the first important point, of course, is we had a different starting point from our INB colleagues in that we've got an existing very good set of regulations that have been serving us well. And we've got the task of considering a large number of amendments, and that's what we're working through. So in a sense, there's probably no surprise that we're making good progress, and we should be. One thing I would say about our meetings right from the start, from last November, and now we're on our fourth meeting this week, is there's been a very strong sense of purpose, shared purpose, a sense of solidarity in the room. And we've seen that starting to come to fruition very much this week with the nature of the discussions around the articles we're going into in depth. Not just speaking to the amendments, but really reflecting on the proposals and including the Secretariat and their advice, in particular on how the process currently works, how any proposed amendments might impact on or be implemented by the work of the national focal points and the team inside the WHO that are implementing the regulations. So I would say this week, from my perspective, has been a really productive week, and we've still got some time before we finish.
Absolutely. I mean, the IHR as a document has been designed to protect the world from emergencies, public health emergencies, and to gear the world to better respond to public health emergencies. But it has been a while since the current IHR has been enacted, and there has been significant changes in the way that the public health is addressed, the way that surveillance is being done. The medical countermeasures to emergencies have evolved significantly. And in addition, the lesson that we have learned from COVID-19 pandemic has necessitated the member states to start the process of looking into various articles and annexes in the current IHR and update them to the current situation that we are having, and be also guided by the lessons that we have learned from COVID-19. So it's a member state-led process. It's from them to them. We are in the WGIHR working group, and the Bureau is working as a facilitator with support from the WHO Secretariat to help guide the process. But after all, it is the member states who will decide if this amendment will be incorporated into the new version of the IHR or not. So we had an agreed method of work by the member states, and we think that we are progressing as planned. If we look into our method of work, into the agendas that we had agreed for every of our four formal meetings that we had so far.
Just coming back to the question of timelines, I think there's sort of increasing recognition that the processes are complementary, but they are also different. They're at different pace, and the INB, as we were talking earlier, has a lot of informal sessions and so on and so forth, and also technically till May 2024. But there were some initial suggestions that you will have to conclude and report to the EB by Jan 2024. Whether that still stands, because we also heard that potentially you could only do an update. You can do a status update to the EB and buy more time for the amendments.
Well, I think as a Bureau, and I'm sure as a working group, everyone is focused on the task we've been given, which is to come up with this package of amendments and make a package available 4 months before the World Health Assembly next May 2024. So we remain focused on that. We've planned our meetings out till December. At the same time, everyone's also cognizant of the link between the two processes. And, for example, I was here last week for the full INB meeting to make sure that, well, as part of our combined efforts to ensure that the two processes are complementary, coherent, and also aligned. And it's clear that there are some aspects of that final package of IHR amendments that will be linked to and dependent on where the INB process finishes. And so there will be a need for us to remain, I guess, in step right up until May 2024. So saying, we don't have a requirement to report the package to the Executive Board per se, but we have an opportunity, as you've suggested, to update the Executive Board and, if necessary, to sort of map out what our pathway is to ensure we have got that final package of amendments. Abdullah?
Absolutely. And the interlinkages between the two processes have been recognized from the beginning. That's why we have, as a joint work between our two processes, set up a series of meetings between the bureaus of the two processes. And also, we had two sessions of joint plenary with member states trying to address the areas of common interest between the two processes. So the member states found that very helpful in delineating the continuum of these two processes. And we don't think that there is a risk from one process being lagging behind, affecting the other process. Yes, I mean, both processes are somewhat, they have a lot of commonalities, but they don't really negatively affect each other if one process is lagging behind. And there are, of course, safety nets when it comes to, for example, the WGIHR process, which that we are already having a document in action. So even the worst case scenario is not bad. We will end up having a document that has been serving the purpose for some time. Yes, it will need to be updated, but to have this update, we need to have a consensus from member states on these amendments. So we don't see that, that these linkages have a negative effect per se. We see that the member states, with support from the bureaus, are addressing them, and they should be addressed.
Yeah, the joint session, the parts that were webcast were really useful and interesting. I believe that you might have some more sessions. Do you already have a clear picture on what, in a way that also saves on the time of the delegations? You identify, I don't know, a couple of issues that are central and that can be sort of addressed in the joint session.
Well, the joint meeting was actually the whole meeting was webcast. So yeah, that was, I think, a really good innovation. And as those who listened in would have heard, there was both really good discussion and also a shared view that it is important we take some of these issues forward together. And one concrete example was the definition and elaboration of a pandemic. And so that's a piece of work that we've been tasked with doing. We'll work with the Secretariat on that. In terms of further detail around how we take forward those other common issues of interest, in particular, the really important ones for both processes, financial mechanisms and access and benefit sharing. Those are two issues that need to be, that are fundamental really to, I think, progress and resolution of both processes. And there's a keen appetite for us to do that as much as possible in a joint way. And as bureaus, the two bureaus intend to get together once we've finished our week of work this week and map out that pathway forward. And there is an appetite for further joint work, but also realism by all of us about the heavy workload we already have. And you would have heard many people talk about the need to avoid a third track and to ensure that the joint work is actually increasing our efficiency so that we're not duplicating the same discussions with the same people in both processes. There's a really strong focus on that.
The way that the bureaus have been designed is really helpful and thoughtful of how the background work of the bureau is overseen by the member states, because the composition of the bureau are representatives of the region, and they are in continuous dialogue with member states through the existing structure of the WHO regions. So that, I think, was really helpful in sensing what member states are perceiving from the progress of the process, what is their willingness to, or positions in certain files, even if we are not in a formal meeting in the intersessional periods. So I think the way that the composition of the bureau was made was really helpful in getting the message back and forth to member states.
That's really interesting. Just one quick follow-up. In terms of understanding potentially what a new financing mechanism can look like for PPR in the context of WHO and a multilateral ABS mechanism, my assumption is that countries would be looking at something that will be applicable both to the IHR and the pandemic accord. Is that potentially one of the goals of this, treating this in a joint format in some sense?
Well, the principal reason we need to take it forward jointly is that there are proposals put forward for amendments to the IHR that address these issues. And at the same time, they are also key issues that are part of the discussions in the INB process. And so there will need to be a resolution of these issues, an agreement around both issues, that can then be appropriately reflected in both documents. And of course, the importance of the IHR is that they apply to all member states and to other states' parties, so they are in a sense universal in their application. Whereas the accord that comes through the INB process, like, you know, even 20 years on from the agreement around the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, it has a very high number of members, but it still doesn't include all member states. And so the way that financing mechanisms, access and benefit sharing is reflected in the two documents will be different, but they need to be aligned, they need to be coherent, and they need to be agreed by member states.
Yeah, the reason, for instance, if you look at access and benefit sharing, I think if the goal is to have essential elements in the pandemic accord, but a protocol defining the details will come later, but there will be, I believe, some kind of a placeholder in the IHR to reflect a future protocol.
Well, we'll just have to see. these are substantive issues,
yeah.
And whilst we've had initial discussions, they are ones that we're very aware that as joint bureau, we will need to progress with some really intense, thoughtful, and inclusive discussions.
Yeah. I'm mindful of the time. Just maybe one or two last questions. One is, are there any set of amendments that are easier to accomplish and those that are more difficult? That's one. And then I actually got a question from one of the academics that, your understanding of your mandate in the event that countries are not able to reach consensus on some of the amendment proposals. So are you going to forge consensus by sort of having smaller forums and trying to sort of hash out a compromise? What will be the mechanism of, you know, those final hours, as it were, or final days and hours of finalizing amendments to the IHR are concerned?
Absolutely. I think the main objective of the whole process is to be as inclusive as possible. And all kinds of discussions that are happening, always take that into consideration. And that's why the formal meetings might not be enough to explore all the positions and discussions. That's why there are intersessional activities that are designed in a way that it is inclusive. All member states are aware of it, and they have a specific set of agenda that is known to everybody before the meeting is taking place, and it is overseen or moderated by the Bureau of the WGIHR. This was helpful in advancing some of the discussions in areas that have been new to the IHR as a concept. And of course, this will be the most difficult to discuss because they have no precedent in the existing document. But member states feel that they should be part of the IHR, so that's why the discussions has to be designed in a way to be specific to these new areas. And as my colleague mentioned, these have been already defined, and they are more or less the same that are common with the IMB process. So what member states are now trying to do is how can we address them in both documents without interference or without overlap? And I think it's getting clearer with time. For example, when you think about financing, when you are talking about the capacity building and the financing mechanism in the context of IHR, you are talking about resilience. You are talking about building capacity at the day-to-day activities that are required for public health protection. But when you are talking about the IMP process, you are talking about different ball game. You are talking about the response during an actual pandemic.
Do you want to take a stab at the easier set of amendments? Do you want to articulate that?
Well, Abdul, I think, has just sort of touched on this, that actually where there are relatively small amendments or updates to existing text in the IHR, existing articles,
right,
those are the ones that tend to be easier to get convergence on. So saying, sometimes you look at the amendments and you think this should be reasonably straightforward, and it transpires. That's not quite where the discussion goes. So the important thing is the way we do it. And this week has been, I think, very satisfying in the sense of the way that we've held the discussions, the degree of engagement, listening to each other, the involvement of the Secretariat, the reflection on the Review Committee's report, and again this common sense of purpose. And whilst our process, the IHR revisions, has got a lower profile than the INB discussions, it's no less and arguably more important in that the regulations apply to everybody. They are the existing legal framework for us to protect citizens around the world from outbreaks and prevent them escalating into the sort of, you know, catastrophic pandemic we had just a few short years ago. And arguably one of our biggest challenges now is that there are other new issues that are distracting countries. And so we've got that very much in mind. We're intent on taking this once in a generation opportunity to update, and we feel the sense of responsibility. I certainly do personally. I know the Bureau does. We take it seriously, and we're very intent on delivering what we've been tasked with doing.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people say that all the previous amendments of the IHR were also substantial for their at the time that they were negotiated. So do you also, is there like sort of a pressure, you know, on this moment that this could potentially be sort of quite expansive? You could end up with something looking very different than what we had, you know, prior to COVID-19.
I think the scope of the IHR is not really much different with the current proposed amendments. There are new concepts that are being introduced, but they are within the general scope of the IHR. So we don't expect any significant changes to the architecture of the current IHR. There will be, if there are agreements on the proposed amendments, there will be some changes to existing articles. But the overall architecture, I don't think it will have any drastic change. Member states understand that. They see this as an extremely important tool that was well written, and the main issue of the IHR and then the past was the implementation, not the actual structure or the scope or the existing articles of that. And so with this in mind, I think the countries have been focusing on trying to improve the current articles and to update them to the current status of public health rather than just creating new streams or new lines.
I think this is great.
We hope you have enjoyed listening to these skillful diplomats. We will be following up with more interviews and more episodes as Geneva moves into a decisive phase in these negotiations in the coming months. To keep an eye on these negotiations and other headlines from Global Health Geneva, check out our newsletter, genevahealthfiles.substack.com. That's genevahealthfiles.substack.com. Or follow us on social media at X, formerly Twitter, @FilesGeneva. You can also follow me @PretPat. Until next time, goodbye.